welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day vacation fix for Wednesday, July 22nd, 2015. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at KingdomStrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando's stroller rentals and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today on the podcast, we're continuing our trend of, trip reports that are maybe a step different than what we've normally been doing around here. And we're going to hear about Mark Harbison's Rocky Mountain tour of national parks. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, you know, we were talking before we started recording, and this is one of those sort of classic dad road trips. And, you know, you and a few other of the guys have sort of adopted this challenge of trying to make sure that your kids get a chance to visit all 50 U.S. states. And so was that part of the goal here?
Absolutely, yeah. We had a few more we need to pick up, and it takes a lot longer out west because there's a lot larger distances between states out there.
Yeah, once you get to the big rectangles, it mm-hmm. just takes a while.
Yeah. So we abused our poor rental minivan. I can say that much.
Okay. Okay, so let's talk just a little bit here at the beginning about how you plan a trip like this, because, you know, we usually are talking about a Disney vacation when we talk about the planning stages, and as complex as that can be, it really is all in one place for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, let's talk a little bit about what goes into planning a vacation here that touches, what, 1, 2, 3, 5 states?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how do you plan a 5-state trip and none of those states are contiguous with your home state?
Well, As we look at the whole map of the U.S., you know, if we set this goal way back when that we wanted to take our kids around and get them to all 50 states, and I don't know if we were bored or what when we set that goal, but it seemed like a good idea at the time. It's something my parents actually did with me when I was a kid, and I have read different things that say that, as you grow up, the things you remember most when you're from your childhood are the experiences you had, and your family vacations are a big part of that. And I think that's very true, because that's pretty much what I remember growing up as being like the best times of my life. And so I wanted to pass that on to my kids. So to plan it out, you look at the map and you think, okay, I want to go and see this part of the country. And I think maybe similar to a Disney trip in that you might look at a different theme park and say, okay, what do I absolutely want to see there? I know I want to ride Space Mountain. I know I want to ride Thunder Mountain, et cetera, et cetera. I think I look at a state and say, okay, if I was in Colorado, what would I absolutely want to see if I was there, you know?
Okay.
And so you start picking out some of the major highlights, like a Rocky Mountain National Park. Say, okay, if I'm going to go out there, then I want to make sure I see that.
Right.
And then as we, you know, as we're trying to cover ground and pick up a few states, we usually kind of treat wherever we fly into as a starting point for a loop, for a road trip. So, we might say, okay, there's a lot of flights into Denver. I might be able to get a flight cheap there. So that'll be my starting point. Now, where can I get from there?
Okay.
And kind of try and plan a loop out. And so you make that loop work with the things that you'd want to see in each state and try and come up with a route that somehow makes sense. Right. You're not doubling back on yourself.
Right, right. So it does sound in some ways a lot like coming up with a good touring plan for a theme park.
It's just
on a much larger scale.
So
you combine, you know, first of all, you've got a plane trip because you're trying to travel, you know, across a couple of time zones here.
Mm-hmm. And I have a 1.5-year-old with me, so.
Right, right. Always adds an interesting additional challenge.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking driving to Denver was probably not an option.
Yeah, you know, you can think about doing that once to pick up some of those states along the way, but
right.
once you've picked up some of those states, you know, that option kind of goes out the window.
Yeah, yeah.
On this trip, you flew into Denver, and you started with sort of a little, you know, dip south there to Colorado Springs for a visit to Pikes Peak. So what was it that, you know, first of all, what was it that put Pikes Peak on your itinerary, and what were sort of the highlights of this opening segment of your trip?
Well, I remembered going up to the summit of Pikes Peak when I was a kid. When my parents took us out there, we rode the Pikes Peak Cog Railway and got all the way to the summit. And it's a mountain, they call them 14ers out there, when they're, you get above 14,000 feet in elevation. So being able to go to the summit of one of those mountains is a pretty big achievement. You know, not too many people get up there.
Especially carrying an 18-month-old.
Yeah. No, I wasn't hiking up. I thought it would be cool for the kids to get up there. You know, the views are very spectacular when you're up that high and you'd be right in the middle of the Rocky Mountains. So that was just something I thought the kids would really enjoy and think was cool. And when I researched it, I looked up the railway, cause a cog railway is kind of neat too. And we have 4 boys in my family, and there's something genetic with boys and trains that you're just, you know, attracted to them from birth, I think.
Right. Well, and, you know, that cog rail is a unique train too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely it is. It's there aren't too many of them left in the country. You know, it operates on that center cog, but I don't want to get into too much detail because we actually ended up not doing the train.
Okay.
Because I researched it and, you know, I have a family of 6, and so paying for admission for anything gets pretty steep pretty quickly. And it looked like it was going to be a very expensive ride. They also have a road that you can drive yourself up to the summit. And doing that, it's a toll road, so you have to pay a toll, but it was still $100 cheaper than the train. So
wow.
That won out on basic economics.
Yeah, that's like, you know, a whole meal.
Right. Easily.
Yeah.
And if you're doing peanut butter and jelly, it's several meals.
This is true. you're driving the road there that kind of winds its way up Pikes Peak. Anything about the visit to Pikes Peak or anything you did while you were there that, you know, stands out in particular?
Well, it's a fun drive to do if you want to terrify your wife. So that's a good thing. Because there's, you know, several sections where you're driving right on the edge of a big drop and, you know, there's no guardrail or anything like that. So I didn't have a problem with it. The road is paved and it's wide and no problem. But my wife told me several times she was just going to stare straight ahead.
Yeah.
So that was fun. there was also – it was definitely worth doing just for the spectacular views you get from that up high. You can see for just miles. You can see the beginning, the start of the Rocky Mountains, where it transitions to the plains of eastern Colorado, snow-capped peaks all around you. There was actually still snow on the mountain when we got up there, and we were there in mid-June, so that was an experience too.
Right.
And my son had – you know that Booking.com commercial where they walk down the hallway and they're talking about the one kid threw up on the plane and the other kid lost his shoe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my son lost his shoe on a plane.
Oh, no.
So that was us. I don't know what happened. He had him in his backpack, and somewhere between Philadelphia and Denver, he lost one shoe.
Well, now, wait. I'll give you, at least he lost it out of a backpack and not off of his foot.
True. This is true. But he still lost it. And
right,
so,
right.
You know, we were up on Pikes Peak and in standing in snow, and he's wearing flip-flops.
Of course.
So. But in any case, the other thing that I was worried about was altitude sickness.
Right.
Especially because we live in Delaware, which is elevation one. And so we certainly weren't acclimated to the air at 14,000 feet. And I could say we definitely noticed a difference the longer we were up there. You know, just even carrying the baby around back and forth as we're walking around, it started to be like, gosh, I'm starting to feel a little lightheaded, you know?
Yeah, you do.
So, yeah, it makes a difference.
Do you have any suggestions or tips for people who are, you know, considering a trip into the mountains like that? I mean, you know, I think we've got a lot of guys who live maybe, you know, sea level areas, and it does have an impact on your planning to go into the Rockies especially, or even some of the, you know, taller mountains in the Appalachians.
Mm-hmm. Well, from everything I read, I think one tip they tell you is you don't have to go up to the top of a mountain right away like we did. You can spend a couple of days out there and just slowly acclimate to the elevation before you go up even higher. So I think that's a useful one. We didn't necessarily have the time to do that. The other one I've heard is that you can combat it by hydrating and just constantly drinking water.
Yeah.
We tried to do that as much as we could.
I can vouch for that one. Mm-hmm. The hydration in the Rocky Mountains especially is extra important because people forget that, you know, when you're in the Rocky Mountains, it's high desert.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, they see the snow and they don't process that the weather there or the climate there is a desert climate. And so in the combination of the altitude and the, you know, overall dryness, mm-hmm. and you don't even realize you're thirsty, but right. you can be totally dehydrated. And that's, I think, what gets you really sick.
Yeah, I think so. We certainly tried to take the advice to heart, and so we were downing a lot of bottles of water. But my son actually did come down with altitude sickness because that night we ate dinner, and then he came back to the hotel and barfed it all up. So
lovely.
Yeah, that was a good start to the trip.
Might as well get it out of the way up front, you know.
So we think it was altitude sickness because he didn't have any other symptoms after that. So,
Well, it was either that or the cheese balls. So,
well, I could be, yeah.
all right, so you're adjusted a little bit at this point to altitude because you're not done with the mountains here, and from Colorado Springs, you're going to head sort of north to the other side of Denver. And head up to Rocky Mountain National Park. And I got to admit, this is the part of your vacation that, you know, I get a little wistful for because I spent a summer, oh gosh, probably almost 20 years ago now, working at a camp that was on the base of Mount Evans.
Oh, okay.
So mm-hmm. it's like next door
yeah.
to Rocky Mountain National Park. The camp yeah. backs up to the park. And it's at 10,200 feet. So it's not quite a 14er. But, you know, camp is at 10,200 feet. And I was, you know, kind of smiling knowingly as you were talking about the snow in Pikes Peak in mid-June. Because I remember mm-hmm. driving up to camp on June 1st and driving up and dealing with chest-high snowdrifts.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was bringing back memories.
Yeah, and we definitely saw more of that at Rocky Mountain. I think I had read they had only opened the road through the park maybe like 3 weeks before we got there.
Wow.
So that was the point where they finally got it plowed well enough that they could open it.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, well, because at a certain point, there's just no place for it to go.
Mm-hmm. You get those big drifts that are 6-7 feet high, and eventually it's just going to collapse if you're cutting a hole through it. So
right, yeah, yeah. All right. So, did you have any particular plan in mind for what you wanted to do in Rocky Mountain National Park?
Well, it's basically we wanted to go from beginning to end. We were going from the east side of the park and driving all the way throughout the west side, and there's basically one road that does that. It's called Trail Ridge Road. And I think I can't remember if it's the highest road in the U.S. or it's one of the highest. But it gets up – the road itself gets up just above 12,000 feet.
Right.
And so we just kind of wanted to do that drive and see the whole park from beginning to end and hope we get caught some scenery and wildlife and anything else you might hope to find in a national park.
So I have to ask, did you go up through Idaho Springs?
No, we did not.
Okay. I was curious because that was my way up to camp, and I was going to comment that that drive up the mountain there, it's just gorgeous. I mean, I would volunteer to make, you know, runs into town to pick stuff up just because it was worth it for the drive.
Okay. Yeah, I did get to see Idaho Springs on the last day as we drove back to Denver. We came back that way.
So. Oh, okay.
We definitely got to see the scenery that way. That it's that whole interstate taking you through the Rockies is just a gorgeous drive.
All right.
But we actually went up north past Boulder and then turned west through Estes Park and entered Rocky Mountain through that side.
Okay. Okay. And so as you were passing through, were there things that you stopped and did along the way, or was it just sort of a scenic view kind of experience in Rocky Mountain National Park?
It was mostly a scenic view experience. We stopped at the visitor center right off the bat because we have one of those national park passports, and so we're obsessive about getting a stamp in each one from all the parks we visit.
Right.
You know, that way you can just brag to your friends about where you've been, and they can just – their eyes will glaze over as you do that. And, you know, it's just one of those things you do. And we also – this is a good tip to keep your kids interested. Every national park has what they call a junior ranger program. And so you stop at the visitor center and talk to the ranger, and they'll give you a booklet that has all sorts of activities you're supposed to do. And depending on your age, they give you a certain number of the activities you have to complete. And it's usually just, you know, just little word games or puzzles that you have to solve about the park, that, you know, different science facts or something about wildlife. Usually they ask you to attend at least one ranger program somewhere during the day. And if you complete all those tasks, then you turn it back into a ranger at the visitor center at the end of the day, and they'll check your work. And they actually do a really good job of spending time and talking over the answers with the kids, so it becomes an educational experience. And then they decide that, you know, they've done enough work to be a junior ranger, so they'll do a little swearing-in ceremony and award them a little plastic badge with the park's name. So it's right. A good way to keep the kids interested as you go through. So okay. That was one of the things we did right from the bat, was starting off the visitor center and getting their junior ranger books.
Right, right.
And after that, it was mostly just a scenery trip, you know, just doing the drive. It takes you all the way above the tree line, so you get into the tundra. And, of course, any guy can't say that without saying the frozen tundra. You know, you have to make that joke so your wife rolls your eyes at you. And we did one hike up there. I had to put the baby in the backpack and, again, worry about altitude sickness. I'm carrying 30 extra pounds on my back, but that was fine, and we enjoyed that. And the scenery was amazing. We saw a lot of wildlife. We saw elk. We saw moose. I even saw a bighorn sheep. I think we saw three of them. And I had never seen them in the wild before, so that was a cool experience.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, so it was really good day. We had gorgeous weather. It was very clear. So, again, you could just see for miles up on top of the mountain.
That's nice because that's, you know, you really got to take full advantage of being up, you know, in that location at that time of year. You didn't have any of the sort of, you know, things that can complicate it or you know, make the trek up that far, you know, disappointing.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
All right. And anything else about Rocky Mountain that you know, stands out before we move on to the other two sort of smaller parks in Colorado that you hit along the way?
I think that pretty much covers it. It's a great drive. It doesn't take all day. You can go through it actually pretty quickly if you wanted to, or you can take as much time as you want enjoying the scenery, but it's just spectacular scenery and a lot of wildlife. So if, you know, if that appeals to you, then it's definitely worth the trip.
Cool. All right. So from there, you proceeded on to a couple of smaller Colorado National Parks, Black Canyon and Colorado National Monument. So
right.
Talk about what the goals were for those two. Was it just a matter of, you know, wanting to check in at the ranger station and be able to say you were there, or were there particular sites there that drew you?
I'm going to be a shallow person and say it was more the former, that it was just kind of obsessively trying to collect our national park stamps and
checking them off the list.
Yeah, pretty much. Part of it was due to the logistics of planning. We knew we were going to go towards Moab, Utah, which is a good base of operations for visiting Canyonlands and Arches National Park, which are two pretty well-known and heavily visited parks.
Right.
And it's high season in the summer there, so all of the hotels there are ridiculously expensive. And I had originally looked at staying there three nights, and when I looked at the hotel rates, we kind of redid our plans, and I cut it down to two nights with the previous night spent in Grand Junction, Colorado, right on the western border.
Okay.
Just to save money.
Sure.
And so by doing that, that meant I had a day to fill when we were just driving from middle Colorado to western Colorado, and we needed something to fill that day. So
okay.
I figured, okay, well, we'll hit these other parks and,
sure,
and see what's there.
And anything surprise you pleasantly there, or jump out and, you know, make you say, you know, glad we shuffled that?
I was very glad we visited. We went to Black Canyon of the Gunnison, which is very out of the way. It's not an easy drive to get there. In fact, we had to drive down the interstate right to Grand Junction and then turn around and turn southeast and drive away from Grand Junction to get there. So
okay.
It was an annoying driving day, I can say that.
Right, because it's one of those that the only way to get there is to go through here.
Right. Right. Either that or take windy mountain roads that'll take three more hours than you want to take, you know. So,
right.
But we got there, and it's a small park. It's very easy to do in a couple hours. The kids were happy they could do their junior ranger thing. There's just a few viewpoints over the canyon, and it's worth seeing because it's completely different from something like the Grand Canyon in that the drop is almost vertical. It's really steep. And so you can see straight down to the river down there. And the reason it's so vertical is because the river is rushing through it at a huge rate of speed. And it's just cutting its way through that canyon. And because it's cutting it so fast, it's falling so far that it's just eroding away so fast. And so it ends up getting very steep. And I remember they had a display in the visitor center that showed that at the bottom of the canyon at one point, the width of the canyon was no wider than the building we were standing in.
Wow.
So that was pretty noteworthy.
That is cool. So this is a canyon that's essentially, you know, a living canyon at this point. It's actively growing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. As long as that river's rushing through. Now, I think it has been diverted for irrigation, you know, with a couple dams upstream.
Right.
So that's changed the character a bit, but you could definitely hear it rushing all the way down there, you know, which is pretty interesting because I went to the Grand Canyon last year, and the Grand Canyon, you stand at the overlook, and you're just struck by how silent it is. There's just this eerie silence coming from that vast space. And Black Canyon was different because you could hear just the rushing water just roaring up through the canyon. So it's a different experience.
Interesting. Yeah, very different. And I think that would have been, you know, one of those things that you didn't expect to find and didn't expect to see, but, you know, kind of added something new and different to the trip. Because didn't you do the Grand Canyon last trip, or am I confusing
yes.
people?
No, that's great. We did Grand Canyon last summer.
Okay. So, mm-hmm. so it was a nice sort of, you know, counterpoint to the Grand Canyon, which you had seen the year before.
Yep, absolutely.
Cool. So you had your night in Grand Junction, and then on to sort of the last of your Colorado stops, and that would have been the Colorado National Monument Park.
Right, and we actually did that the night before.
Oh, okay.
And we just did basically what I call a McTour of the National Monument.
Okay.
We stopped in the visitor center. We got our passport stamp, and then we just basically did a quick drive through. I think the road through the monument is about 20 miles long, and there are several overlooks. And it was basically drive up to the overlook, hop out, take a picture, jump back in the car, and drive off. So I can't give you a whole lot of detailed analysis of Colorado National Monument, but I can say this, the scenery was, again, very spectacular. You're starting to get into Red Rock country there.
Right.
That's part of that desert that's west of the Rockies, and so you get some really interesting rock formations.
Cool. Well, that's sort of where you're headed, right, is the mm-hmm. interesting rock formations, because your next stop is on into Moab, Utah, which mm-hmm. was your jumping off point for Canyonlands and Arches National Parks.
Right. So that was, we got up early in Grand Junction and headed west because we wanted to hit Canyonlands that day. So we were trying to get an early start to beat both the crowds and the heat, because now we're in the desert and suddenly we don't have snow at 14,000 feet. Now we have 100-degree weather.
right. Yeah, now you've hit the hot desert as opposed to the high desert.
Yes. So the earlier you start, the better. And I can give you one tip on that. When you're driving west into Utah, if you're going to Moab, Google Maps in every direction, site out there will give you directions to take the interstate and then turn down the main road and go south. And that might be slightly faster, but there's a back way into Moab that's just a two-lane, state country road. And it's such a spectacular drive. It's totally worth doing.
Cool.
I'd have to look up the route number. I don't have it with me. But when you first get off the interstate, you think you've made a wrong turn because you get on this little tiny road that's cracked and in disrepair and has no stripes. And then you go by an abandoned ghost town. And
you start wondering whether you left the real town too far behind.
Yeah, it's somehow you drove into a Mad Max movie all of a sudden, but it does pick up after that. You make one more turn and you get on the state route, and then it takes you through Red Rock canyons that follow the Colorado River. And it's a much better way to go into town than taking the main route. The main route is a very boring drive compared to that one. So,
yeah, it sounds like it.
So I'll throw that one out there. But Canyonlands is a little bit further from Moab. It's about, 30 miles northwest. But it's an easy drive if you're using Moab as a base. And it's just gorgeous country. It's exactly what the name implies. There's just red rock canyons everywhere. We were in the Island of the Sky section, and you just drive in and there's several overlooks where you can stop and just see these vast canyons spread before you. We headed straight all the way for the end of the road to Grandview Point, because we knew there was a hike there that we wanted to do. It's about a mile long, and it takes you right out to the edge of one of these little fingers of land that, stretches out over the canyons. And so we all did that. The kids did great. I was able to carry the baby on my back, no problem. Thankfully, it wasn't too much elevation change on that one. And we were rewarded with some really spectacular views there.
Cool. Those sound neat.
Yep, absolutely. And again, it was worth doing. I think we got there about 10 in the morning, and that was much better than trying it at 2 in the afternoon, temperature-wise.
I bet. And so... Is that, I'm sorry, I lost track of where we are here in Utah, so.
Canyonlands.
You're in Canyonlands. All right. Mm-hmm. So you're in Canyonlands, mm-hmm. and from Canyonlands, you've still got the Arches National Park. So what's your transition from Canyonlands to Arches?
Well, we did Canyonlands the first day, then we went back to town, swam in the pool to cool off, and then the very next day, we went to Arches. And again, it was the same strategy. Arches is very popular and can get very crowded to the point where they actually have traffic congestion problems in the park. The other issue you have is, the famous arch that everybody thinks of when they think of Arches National Park is called Delicate Arch.
Okay.
And to get to that, there's a hike you can do. There's either the hike or two overlooks from the road. And the overlooks from the road are so far away, you can barely see anything. They're really not worth the trip.
Oh.
So if you want to see it, you've got to do the hike. And the hike is 1.5 miles straight up the side of a rock. It's basically just a long climb.
Okay.
And so, again, you want to do that as early in the morning as possible.
And this is a climb that you're doing with an 18-month-old strapped to your back.
Yes. Right.
Okay.
Because, you know, I'm smart. You know, I tried to train for this in Delaware, but again, you know, the highest point in Delaware is usually standing on the tailgate of somebody's truck. So there's not a whole lot you can do to practice for it here.
Right, right.
So we just did the best we could. You know, take a lot of water with you and start early in the morning. And we got to the parking lot, the base of the hike, at about 7:15 in the morning. And I want to say it was already easily half full. There were a lot of people there. So it's a very popular hike. We just chugged water. We went up the side of the rock. We stopped as much as we needed to. We drank as much water. We just broke it down into sections. Like, okay, let's get to that bush. Now let's get to that bush, you know, and just kept going. And I can definitely tell you it's worth the work to get up there. You know, it's hard work. It's a brutal hike. But once you get up there, the scenery is just spectacular. Delicate Arch is kind of in a natural amphitheater, and you can see mountains framed behind it. It looks like somebody placed it there on display, you know, for everybody to see. So it's
right,
really cool.
Right. Very cool.
The rest of the day was just spent hiking to see as many arches as we could. I think the ranger said there's over like 2,000 arches in the park.
Wow.
We didn't see that many.
Did the ranger say anything about, you know, how those arches came to be? Why are there 2,000 arches in that area?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of just a unique area in terms of the geology. It has to do with the plate tectonics and pushing up levels of sandstone in such a way that they're exposed. And then it's basically just erosion working the way at them. And the sandstone erodes in such a way that it lends itself to forming these arch formations. So it's constantly, I guess, under construction from a geologic standpoint. You know, wind and rain is constantly working on it.
Right.
And eventually it'll erode away. It'll form an arch. And that arch will be there for a while. But eventually all arches will collapse. So there's no guarantee that the park you see today will be the same a few years from now.
Right, right. Okay, yeah, because each of those arches is always subject to collapse just from natural erosion.
Yeah, and it's just slowly wasting away, you know. So it's kind of inevitable that they're eventually going to fall down.
Right, right. All right, that makes sense.
So it's really a park you have to be willing to hike if you want to see these things, because most of the arches, there's a few that are visible from roads and overlooks, but you have to hike to get to a lot of them. So you got to be prepared with a lot of water. Also, Utah's definition of level is not the same as Delaware's. Delaware's means you're walking on flat ground. In Utah, it means your overall net gain is zero.
Okay.
But
so there are lots of ups and downs along
between.
The way. I see. Now, did you feel like, or maybe I should ask first, did you do that hike more than once, or was this, you know, just one day, see as many arches as you can?
This was just one day, see as many as we could. We planned for the whole day there.
Okay.
And we knew we wanted to do Delicate Arch first thing in the morning. That was going to be the hardest one.
Right.
And so we wanted to do that during the coolest part of the day and get the hardest one over with.
Any sense when you were done that you wish you'd had more time, you would have gone back out and seen more?
I don't think so. I think all of us really enjoyed the park. I think we were glad we did all the work we did. I think we calculated we hiked over 6 miles that day.
Okay.
I think we would have happily spent more time there to see more of it and maybe do some more of the hikes. But with the baby, we were still limited as to what we could do. Some of the other arches we didn't get to see involved hikes that were a lot more strenuous. And so I think we did everything we could with a 1.5-year-old strapped to my back. I'll put it that way.
Makes sense.
And we were so exhausted by the end. The only way I got my one son through it was we said we'd do a pizza and pool party at the end of the night.
Okay.
So we got to the hotel and just ordered pizza from a local place and ate it by the pool.
Right. Hey, pizza and pool party, it works. You know, you'd done much more, you'd probably fallen asleep anyway.
Oh, that was perfect for him, yeah. And he kept asking, is it time for the pizza and pool party? We're like, almost, you know, just get through this hike. Okay.
Excellent. Hey, give the boy a goal.
That's right. It worked great.
All right. So now you had one other stop here that was sort of can we squeeze in another state stop, it sounded like, where you, when you moved on from Arches, you kind of swung into Idaho to visit the Craters of the Moon National Monument. And it's a national monument I've never heard of. So tell us about what Craters of the Moon National Monument is.
Well, it's basically an ancient lava flow in the middle of Idaho. So I think because it's unique from a geologic standpoint, it became a protected national monument. So, you know, you're just in a valley in between mountains, and it just happened to be a spot where there was a lava flow that created a unique landscape. It's almost like a moonscape out there. So that's basically the gist of it. The highlight of it is you can go through. We were there when wildflowers were blooming, so you could see a lot of wildflowers growing right through the lava rock, which is an interesting sight. Uh-huh. And the coolest part was that there's actual lava tubes that you can hike through. So
cool.
It's just a little bit of caving, basically.
Yeah.
So our kids loved that. They ate that up.
Well, I bet it's a lot cooler than hiking up the verticals in Moab.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When you're up on top of the lava, you're baking because all that black rock is, you know, soaking up the heat for you.
Right.
But you get underneath it and it gets a lot cooler, temperature wise.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it obviously sounds like the lava tube hike was sort of the highlight of Craters of the Moon National Monument.
Yeah, definitely.
Anything else about Idaho that stood out?
Well, we weren't there for very long. We did have some friends that we visited there, so that was, a highlight for us that others probably wouldn't be too interested in. But I'd say Craters of the Moon was the main event there.
Okay. And so your next sort of, big leap is Idaho into Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a couple of major destinations to hit in Wyoming, at the Grand Tetons and Yellowstone.
Yes.
So talk to us about Idaho to the Grand Tetons.
Well, it's a very pretty drive because you're going over mountains to get there. Our friends recommended a little convenience stop along the way. You're driving along Teton Pass, and there's a convenience store that serves square ice cream.
Okay.
So I might have to look up the name of that later on because I forget the name of it. But they just basically have a special ice cream scoop that makes it come out as a square instead of a circle.
Okay.
It's enough of a novelty to get us to stop. It doesn't take much to get us to stop for ice cream. So, that was cool. We stayed in Jackson, Wyoming, which is kind of the town that serves as the tourist hub for the area.
Uh-huh.
We stayed there the first night, and then we visited Grand Teton the next day. Again, one notable spot to visit there in the Jackson area is we had dinner at the Bar J Chuck Wagon. And I guess they've been there for years. It's a ranch that basically does a chuck wagon dinner and a Western music show where they have five musicians get up there singing cowboy songs. And it was phenomenal. The food was really good. I splurged and got a steak, figuring I was on a cattle ranch. So that's what you do.
Sure.
And that was totally worth it. We decided, my wife and I were celebrating our anniversary later, and this was our most expensive meal, so we decided to call this our romantic anniversary meal.
Had some additional attendance.
Yeah, about 800 or so of our closest friends sitting on picnic benches with a tin plate dinner. So, But that food was awful good.
Yeah.
And the show was excellent. I'm not much of a Western guy or a country music fan or anything, but this was more like folk songs and old cowboy songs, some spirituals, and the musicians were just incredibly talented. I think they said their fiddler was 7-time Wyoming fiddling champion or something like that, and 2-time national champ. And he was definitely talented. I couldn't believe how fast he could move his fingers and play the instrument, and everybody else was right in line. We had a blast. The kids had a blast. It was a great, wholesome family activity. I would highly recommend it if you're in the area.
Excellent.
So moving on, we went to Grand Teton, and that's, again, a park you can easily cover in a day. It's not very long, maybe about 20 to 30 miles at most from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just mostly about scenery and wildlife, very similar to Rocky Mountain that way. It's just several overlooks. The Tetons are just a gorgeous mountain range, and it's just teeming with wildlife everywhere, or at least it's supposed to be. We didn't see as much there as we did at Rocky Mountain, but
Safari, right? They were hiding from you?
What's that?
Sort of like Kilimanjaro Safari in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I kept looking for the animatronic sleeping lion, but, you know.
Hey, I think I found the name of the square ice cream place.
Oh, did you?
Rainy Creek?
That yes, right? That's it. Nice Googling there. but anyway, yeah, Grand Teton is definitely worth the visit just from a spectacular scenery standpoint. We only spent a day there, and then at night we drove up to Yellowstone, and that I had kind of saved for the end of the trip because I knew I loved it as a kid, and it's a really unique landscape, and so I kind of wanted to make that the climax of the vacation.
Sure.
So we spent 3 nights at the Old Faithful Inn, which Disney fans will know was the main inspiration for the Wilderness Lodge at Disney World.
Right, right.
And it's just such a cool building. It was built at the turn of the century, I believe 1904 to 1905, if memory serves correctly.
Okay.
Basically built in one winter, and it's almost completely built out of lodgepole pine trees. So it's a very rustic building. My kids loved it there. I think we all loved it there. It's just such a cool place. Very rustic. You walk in and you can immediately see where Disney got all their ideas.
Okay.
The lobby is several stories high. You know, lots of wood. Looks like tree trunks holding the place up.
Because they are.
Yeah. Good point. We did a tour of it later in the trip, and the guide told us that originally they left all the bark on all the logs.
Uh-huh.
And somewhere along the way, they decided to scrape it all off. So they had people had to go around on every pillar and scrape all the bark off. I don't know how they did that, but I'm sure that was a job.
Yeah. My goodness. Because you got to climb up. I mean,
yeah,
that's the hard part.
Yeah. And you're, several dozen stories. Feet in the air at
yeah.
least. I'd say another tip for that one is if you want to stay there, you need to book it well over a year in advance.
Yeah, good point.
Yellowstone's a very popular destination, and lodging in the park is also extremely popular because it's such a huge park that there aren't really many towns close by.
Right. And from having looked into this with some friends, it's even if it looks a little expensive initially,
mm-hmm.
it's not like it's a lot cheaper to stay outside the park.
Right. Right.
Because it's just so isolated.
Yes. And actually, the Old Faithful Inn is actually one of the best deals you'll find in the area. It depends on what you're willing to live with.
Okay.
When I researched it, the hotels in the surrounding towns were at least $200 a night and up.
Okay.
If you want to stay in the old historic rooms of the Old Faithful Inn, you can get it. I think the rack rate for my room was about $108. So you think, wow, great deal. What's the catch? Well, there is a catch.
Okay.
The bathrooms are community bathrooms. So it's like living in a college dorm.
Right.
I didn't think it was so bad. We're cheapskates, so we're willing to accept a lot of indignities to save money. I have no problem with that.
Right.
But really, when we got there, what we learned was the rooms themselves are really cool because, again, it's just all wood everywhere, so it's a very rustic feel. And you have your own sink in your room.
Okay,
so you can pretty much take care of 90% of your bathroom needs there in your room, and then you can just use the shared one for the toilet and the shower.
Right, right.
So it's really not that big of a deal at all.
Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it to save money and stay in the historic building.
Do you remember what the price difference was for the, modernized part of the facility?
I want to say that got up into the 150 to 180 range per night.
Okay.
So, you're saving at least, $40 a night.
Yeah, even in the more modern area.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Right. And don't be fooled by that, because in the Old Faithful Inn, the more modern area was built in 1920.
Okay, so modern, it's all relative.
Yes. Yeah, and it didn't look nearly as cool.
Okay. And did you have any challenges? I was curious about this. I was just thinking about it because you're not a small family.
to say the least.
did you have, near the end of the trip, was it a challenge as you were planning this out to find places that could easily accommodate six of you?
Well, it's not so much of a challenge if you conveniently forget a kid or two.
Okay.
With a family my size, you often run into a problem where, you try and book hotels online and it'll tell you maximum occupancy 4 in a room.
Right.
Something along those lines. And I'm sorry, I'm not booking 2 hotel rooms. Okay. So sometimes you have to get a little creative. Now, usually when I do a search, I'll start by putting in my actual number of my family and see how many rooms I can get and what's available to me and go from there.
Mm-hmm. But
sometimes you have to be a little creative. Our kids have no problem sleeping on the floor, so we'll bring a sleeping bag along or something along those lines. We have a little pea pod sleeper that we put the baby in, and he did okay for the most part in that. So we'll cram everybody into a room if we have to. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, if you call a hotel directly and speak to somebody there, then they'll be willing to accommodate you all in one room, whereas the website is just kind of more generic and set up to be standard, and it doesn't
right.
make those kinds of accommodations. So, but I guess it's my confession that, yeah, I have, said we've only had 2 kids before, and
right.
It works. Usually the hotel really doesn't care.
Yeah.
You just got to do what you got to do to be able to get there.
Right. And you read the room descriptions carefully and
mm-hmm.
when they're, you figure out where the extra space is.
Right. Exactly. A place like Disney World, you're not going to get away with that because you need a ticket for everybody in your group.
Right. Right.
So, someplace like that, you won't be able to do it. But a standard hotel is typically willing to work with you.
Right. Sure. And so let's talk a little bit about the other things you experienced there, at Yellowstone, because we talked about the hotel, but we haven't really talked about the park.
Right. Yeah. And there's a lot to see. As I said, it's a huge park. I think it's bigger than my state and Rhode Island combined, if I remember correctly, which isn't too surprising. We're in a small state, but still for one park to cover that ground is pretty impressive. We basically tried to do as much driving as we could the first day. We had 2 full days in the park. And then the second day we were staying right in the main geyser basin, and we figured we'd use that day to just stay close and hike around and see the geysers. That was the plan we followed.
Okay.
So our first day we drove out to the east side of the park to see what they call the Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone. That's a spectacular area where the Yellowstone River flows over two waterfalls very close to each other. The second falls, the lower one, is a huge drop, a couple hundred feet, and it flows through a yellow canyon. Just a gorgeous spot. So that was totally worth seeing and worth getting up early for, because it looks best in the morning light, the way it faces east. So east sun, you know,
right.
shines on it. We did that. We drove up north. We went to Mammoth Hot Springs, which is at the northernmost part of the park. And that's just a gigantic hot spring, as the name implies. Where, you know, hot water is just bubbling up from the thermal features down below and depositing limestone deposits, and just keeps building and building as the water bubbles up to the surface.
Okay.
We did briefly go out of the park in order to cheat and sneak into Montana and get another state.
Does that count?
Of course it counts. Our rule is you have to set foot in the state. Okay. So we've said that airports don't count because you're just sitting in an airport and you don't actually touch the soil.
Okay.
But for the purposes of our counting, we drove across the border and got out of the car and stood on the soil of Montana. So, you know, by my definition, we have been in Montana.
But you missed all the sights of Montana.
I mean, we did, and we need to go back.
I could have taken you to the largest hydrogen sulfide plant in the Western Hemisphere.
Oh, well, now you tell me.
Yeah, that, you know, you do have to plan ahead for that trip too, because you do have to bring an extra set of clothes that you can throw away and leave there when you leave the plant.
Well, there's a downside to everything. No, actually, I had considered adding Glacier National Park to the trip because we wanted to get there. The problem is it's not close to anything.
No.
And it's it would have added about another 4 days or so to the trip, and that was just too expensive. So
sure.
We're saving that one for later.
Okay.
We wanted to try and see the Roosevelt Arch, which was dedicated by Teddy Roosevelt when Yellowstone was made a national park, and that's at the north entrance in Montana. The problem is when we drove up there, the whole area was under construction, and we couldn't get anywhere near it.
Oh, well, that's unfortunate. All right, so I'll cut you a break then on the whole, you know, doing the state line dance there in Montana.
Oh, we definitely cheated, you know. I defy anybody to tell me I wasn't in Montana. I was like,
well,
hey, you were there.
True. All right.
So that was part of it. And then we hit a couple geyser basins on the way back to Old Faithful that were along the way. And that way we could, you know, see what sites they had there. Some of the hot springs with all the spectacular colors from the different algae and bacteria in them. So we got to cross a lot off that day, and that allowed us to do the next day spending mostly around the geyser basin and hiking around there.
Okay.
I don't think the geysers ever get old. I could watch them erupt all day. They're just really cool. Old Faithful obviously goes off about every 90 minutes or so. It seemed like the park rangers had gotten very good at predicting that. They did a good job giving you a time when they predicted to go off, and they were usually within a few minutes. So that made it easy to watch that one. And then they would give you predictions for some of the other more regular geysers along the way. And it was just up to you to, if you wanted to hoof it all the way out there to see it go off. The whole trail there, I think, is about 3 miles round trip. So you can definitely wear yourself out hiking that whole area.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think that would definitely, you know, build up in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's worth it again.
Right,
you know,
right. And
where else are you going to watch geysers go off?
Well, and by this time, you'd kind of, you know, built up your endurance.
Absolutely. You know, and it wasn't 104 degrees, so it didn't seem so bad.
That's true, too.
But then again, you know, by the end of the day, I was ready to get that blasted backpack off and never see it again. So I think my family gave me a lot of crap that day because I was calling it our easy day, quote unquote. because we weren't driving all over the place. We were just sticking close. And I hadn't realized how long those trails actually were.
Oh, yeah.
In order to see some of this stuff. And so that was kind of my bad.
Well, if it's any consolation to them, you know, you had to be feeling it at least as much as they were.
Oh, you're not kidding. my shoulders were just a wreck after carrying the baby around.
All right. So from, the national park there, are you flying back to Delaware from there? Or you got to drive back to Denver still?
We had to drive back to Denver.
Okay.
That was the cheapest tickets were out of Denver, so we just decided we'd do a big loop.
Yeah. So was there any, stops in between, or was this sort of the express lane and it's time to get back?
Mostly it was a long drive back. We did stop in the northeast corner of Utah again to go to Dinosaur National Monument. Okay. And that's where they had a quarry where they discovered just an inordinate amount of dinosaur bones all preserved and fossilized there. And so they house it in a big visitor center building where they just preserve the bones right in the rock there that you can go see. So we thought that was worthy of a visit.
Yeah, sounds like it.
It's, again, one of those places where you spend an hour or two tops and you move on. So it just helps break up a trip.
Right.
But it was definitely worth stopping by.
Okay. So, you kind of go on through there. You're back to Denver for your flight back. So, time to kind of, look back on the trip a little bit. And one thing we didn't talk a whole lot about is, food, which we normally do spend time talking about on a trip report. I understand part of that is because you were mostly trying to economize. But we did talk a little bit about square ice cream and the chuck wagon.
Right.
Any other unique food experiences or interesting food experiences out of this trip?
Well, we always try and find some good places when we're traveling. We'll watch shows like Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives and those types of things to try and get some ideas.
Sure.
And just say, hey, if we're ever in this area, we should stop by here, And so we did a couple of those. There's a couple places in Denver that we really liked. One place was called Steuben's. I think it's Steuben's Food Service.
Okay.
That was a restaurant that's built in an old car garage where they did just car repairs. And basically anything fried on the menu is really good there. Monte Cristo sandwiches were fantastic. And I had a deep fried apple pie for dessert that was just heaven.
Ooh, yum.
And they served that with ice cream, and they also – it was weird. They had ice cream on top of Frosted Flakes next to the pie. And I don't think I can have Frosted Flakes with just milk anymore.
No.
I think I'd have to have ice cream with it now.
I concur. I think it's a necessity.
Absolutely. So that was worth the trip. What else did we do? The chuck wagon was a highlight. The last night before we left Denver, we ate downtown. 16th Street is basically a big pedestrian mall downtown where they have a lot of shops and malls and restaurants. And there's a burger bar there called the 5280 Burger Bar.
Okay.
That place was phenomenal. If you know me, I have to have a few burger joints along the way. And that was probably the best one we did on this trip. Everything there is homemade. They make their own cheese. They make their own ketchup. It's down to that level of detail.
Yeah.
They have all sorts of different burger creations on the menu. Of course, they give them various names. I had the Boss Hog Burger, which was beef with pulled pork piled on top, bacon and cheddar and barbecue sauce.
Okay, sounds good.
My wife had the I can't decide option where they give you a couple sliders of different combinations.
Okay.
I think she had one with that had like a green chili sauce on it, and another one that was like a Wagyu beef with a steakhouse sauce and a hand-breaded onion ring, and she said they were both excellent. There's also another option on the menu that's bleeped out. It's called the A-hole burger.
Okay.
And if you read that one, it says, we spend a lot of time coming up with these options, but if you think no, you know better, this one's for you. So that was the build your own burger option.
Okay.
And I think that was the one that convinced me I wanted to eat there, because I love a place with a sense of humor. So that was well worth the trip. And they also, right next door, have their own ice cream bar as well. And again, they make all of their own ice cream. My daughter gives me a lot of crap because whenever I get ice cream, I almost always get cookies and cream. But I figure it ain't broke, so I'm not fixing it. She'll usually say something like, oh, you're going taking a walk on the wild side today, huh, Dad? But so I went up there, and of course they had an Oreo flavor on the menu. So I was like, well, I know what I'm getting.
There you go.
She's rolling her eyes at me. But talking to the folks there, it actually wasn't your normal standard cookies and cream, you know, vanilla with Oreos in it. They actually said they take Oreo cookies and cream them. I don't even know how that's possible, but that's what they do. And then they add more Oreo cookie bits after that. And all I can tell you is it tasted like Oreo cookie ice cream, not vanilla ice cream.
Okay.
And it was phenomenal.
That does sound good.
So I'd say that was well worth the trip. If you're ever in downtown Denver, that is highly recommended.
Right, and the name of that one again is?
The 5280 Burger Bar.
Oh, okay.
And 5280 being, of course, you know, right, 1 mile. So for the Mile High City.
All right. Well, those both sound really good. And going now, you know, kind of looking back at the trip, can you think of maybe, you know, a couple of things that you want to share with us because you wish you'd known them before heading out?
Oh, let me think about that. This will be the long pause you edit out of the podcast. I can't think of anything offhand that really jumps out as something that I wish I had known or wish I had done differently. I think everything went pretty smoothly. I will say that sometimes with hotels, you get what you pay for.
Right.
I price-lined a few, and so we ended up taking the economic option a couple nights, and I don't think my kids have a desire to ever stay in a Super 8 motel again. And I probably don't have a very high desire to do that either.
Right. They can leave the light on all they want, but you're not going.
Yeah. They really – that was one of those things where it said room will be assigned on check-in. And so we get there with a family of six, and both Super 8s we stayed at, they assigned us a room with one queen bed.
Lovely.
And we're sitting there like, I don't think that's going to work. So, unfortunately, the one was in Jackson, Wyoming, and they had sold all their other rooms, so the poor kids all slept on the floor that night. They basically paid for my mistake, so that was a regret.
Yeah, yeah. At least for the kids.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I felt bad for them, you know, but after carrying the baby around on my back all day, I wasn't going to sleep on the floor, so.
I don't blame you. All right, and then, you know, to end on a high note, if you got to pick maybe, you know, three highlights of the vacation, what would those be?
Three highlights from the vacation. For me, I'd say Rocky Mountain National Park was fantastic just for the scenery and seeing so much wildlife. There's a different thrill you get when you see wildlife that's actually out in the wild as opposed to at the zoo, you know.
Sure.
It's a sense of discovery. I'd say Arches National Park was very special just because we saw so many unique formations, and there was just the pride that the family conquered a pretty brutal hiking day.
Sure.
You know, that was a sense of accomplishment. And Yellowstone was just a real treat. I was glad I saved it for the end because, it's such a unique site with all the thermal features and geysers. You don't get to see that anywhere else. And, B, just staying right there in the middle of it, in the Old Faithful Inn with such a cool building was just a great experience. You could basically walk outside at any time of day and watch Old Faithful erupt.
Wow.
So those are the best parts of the trip for me.
Sounds very cool. Well, thanks for coming on and sharing this trip with us. You know, I like every once in a while branching out a little bit and talking about some trips that are not Disney trips, because there are some great destinations all over the country and indeed all over the world. We've had people come on and talk about, you know, Japan and Europe and things like that, too. So thanks for helping broaden our horizons a little bit.
Absolutely. And as much as I love Disney and would love to go there a lot, I think variety is the spice of life, and there's a lot more to see in the world than just Disney. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on this podcast, but I think it's true. And I think for me, the novelty would wear off if I did Disney all the time. And so it's nice to get out there and see some of the things that, for instance, in this case, actually inspired Disney, such as the old Faithful Inn.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks again, Mark, and look forward to talking to you again next time. Next summer, you'll do you already have the agenda set for next summer?
Not yet. I have no idea. But if I can let you in on a little secret, I might have a Disney trip coming up soon. Just me and the wife and no kids. So that might be the next one to look forward to.
Excellent.
The kids are not very happy about that.
I'll get over it.
Spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dreamfinder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment. And there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.